Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's December the 5th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, the Speaker of the House has put her head down and she's moving precariously forward on energy legislation. Farm groups are praising the Senate for passing a bilateral free trade agreement with Peru. And for the first time ever, USDA will release a key government report while the futures markets are open. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour. So stay with us for this Wednesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, willag.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to willag.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, providing independent commodity and financial analysis to clients throughout the United States. Risk Management Commodities Incorporated has offices located in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. More information is available at 866-837-9027.
Taking a look on this Wednesday afternoon at the numbers in Chicago as they settled for the day. December contract in the wheat pit was 11 and a quarter lower at $8.63¾. March contract at $8.85, down 9, and July at $7.71¾, down 2¾ for the day. December corn at $3.94 unchanged, March unchanged at $4.11¼, and the May contract at $4.22¼, up a half. December corn futures next year down a penny and three quarters at $4.35¾ a bushel. January soybean futures $10.99½, 8 cents higher. The March contract at $11.17½, up 8, and the May futures at $11.27¾, up 9¼ for the day. November soybeans at $10.38¾, up 5½ cents. December bean meal futures at $300.60, up $5.10. January futures at $303.40, up 5¢. December bean oil, $45.25, down 25. January futures down 23 at $45.70. December live cattle from the CME Group, $93.72½, down 55 cents. Live cattle February contract at $95.95, down 35. January feeders at $106.25, down 75 cents. The March contract at $107.45 a hundredweight, down 57½. December lean hog futures at $55.37½, up $1.07½. The February futures 77½ cents higher at $61.10 for the day. January crude oil now trading $87.60, is down 72 cents a barrel. The February contract at $88.10, that's down a penny. And the CRB index at 340.22 is up 14. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands 130 points higher at 13,378 for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On the line with us this afternoon, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mr. Cooley.
Good afternoon. A nice, cool, windy, crisp day in central Illinois, Todd. Also, a tip of the hat to the University of Illinois for celebrating their 75th anniversary in Ag Economics School. They had a wonderful reception at Campbell Alumni Center. And also, a tip of the hat to the Bi-State Ag Extension meeting at the Beef House restaurant yesterday. We had over 185 people there, and it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of good questions, and everybody seems to be very bullish on the state of agricultural in the two-state area.
Tell me about some of that bullishness, and maybe we better talk about lead option soybeans to begin with. $11 was the mark, and they made it.
Well, once, you know, on the ag economics deal, they did make the reference to the land-grant college and over $6,000 an acre land in the state of Illinois in several locations. And, you know, it's a land-grant college and a tip of the hat to that. But over at the bi-state meeting at Covington, Indiana, there was a big crowd there, you know, listening to, you know, what we had to say late in the day. And, of course, there's tremendous interest in corn, soybeans, and wheat, but also talk and conversation about the dollar, crude oil, and the state of the U.S. economy. And, you know, it was really appropriate because we basically got hammered with a lot of questions. And I think everybody does feel that we do have a pretty good state of agricultural outlook here for the next 2 to 3 years, we hope.
Well, which do you want to take up then? You want to talk about crude oil and what OPEC did this morning, or do you want to talk about the potential bottom in the dollar?
Well, you know, we do get the feeling that there is talk of an interest rate cut. And, you know, the panels basically split on, you know, should we really bail out these money center banks and stock trading companies for making a lot of bad loans. It affects about 20% of the homes in the United States, believe it or not. And we're talking anywhere from, I think, $600 billion to $100 billion worth of loans on these homes. So it is a big part of the economy. You know, it was, you could see pros and cons with the conversation. The other factor is crude oil is a big, important part of the equation. And, you know, one question we did ask, or they did ask us, is how much fluff is in the corn and soybean market based on the high crude oil and the weak dollar? And I think Mr. Nelson stole the show on that answer by saying there is some price appreciation here. He thought it was at least 20 cents in corn. I think we have to see price erosion in the corn, I mean, in the crude oil market to really confirm that there is a lot of fluff here. You know, I'm really of the idea that the markets are pretty strong, and we have to respect the Chicago Board of Trade discovery price mechanism.
You know, if you look at the November, let's see, if we look at crude oil at this point, the January contract at, what, $87 or thereabouts, $87.26. I've got about a 10-minute delay on it, so maybe. But in that area for the crude, can it break any further? It went nearly to $100. We've lost more than 10% of the lead option value at this point.
You know, a couple of things that, you know, we basically hope. Of course, we know the Arab countries are very big investors in the U.S. Market, you know, the financial market. There are several large investors, of course, in Citibank alone. You know, and, of course, the ethanol part of the equation is extremely important. You know, the general opinion is, from everything I read, is that the crude oil market is going to stay basically pretty firm here in the future. You know, we are using, I think, 85 billion barrels of oil a day, and that's just exactly maybe 85 and a half billion barrels of production. So there's not a lot of leeway or room for error. And, you know, anytime there's a war threat or transportation disruption, we do see some price spikes in the marketplace. The one thing that would create a downswing in, of course, the stock market here and also the crude oil market is if we would have an economic slowdown in the United States. And that's something that I think the Federal Reserve is very much aware of. And you can just see the concerns of market analysts from the government to the major stock trading companies of worry about an economic slowdown and watch that the subprime issue would spill over in the other parts of the economy and world trading.
Apparently it took the officials at OPEC all of about an hour this morning to decide that they weren't going to open the spigots any further than they already have. And they say crude oil and usage is supply and demand is in balance.
I would imagine on the positive side, though, I would imagine with Cesar Chavez taking a good beating in the free elections in Venezuela and also basically, the standing ovation for Putin, that, I think that the Russians want, a good economy, and they realize that one way to get that, of course, is with a lot of crude oil production. And my hunch is that there's going to be probably pumping for more oil than you might think. And hopefully that will stabilize the U.S. Economy in here for at least a while until we get the subprime issue ironed out.
Well, they will feed Europe, of course, because that's where the pipelines come from, out of Russia and across Ukraine. And they have the actual spigot. They have the oil field and the spigot there. Pipelines other places around the globe are controlled by other countries. China is still playing a big factor in this.
Yeah, and one thing that we also mentioned is that the U.S. Is watching Congress closely to see if we do get an energy bill, that's A, and of course also a farm bill, and we're keeping our fingers crossed. The farm bill is very proactive ethanol, and I'm sorry, the energy bill is very proactive ethanol, and that also stabilized corn prices to a great extent yesterday.
Okay, anything else to add before I let you go?
Have a profitable day, and always nice talking to you, and we get a lot of nice compliments about WILL Radio, and their agricultural programming is basically none better.
Thank you much. And
have a good day.
You know you are a big part of that. Of course, Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Our thanks for all that he does for the radio station and for agriculture across the Midwest.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, will join us. Here's what Ed Kieser says about the weather for tonight across the two-state region. Near Lake Michigan, it'll be mostly cloudy with some snow showers. Elsewhere, clearing lows will range from 3 in far northwestern Illinois to 23 in the far south. By the way, a snow advisory is in effect for parts of extreme southeastern Indiana. That until 4 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon. Tomorrow now, in the northwestern part of the two-state region in west-central Illinois, mostly cloudy with light snow arriving during the afternoon. Elsewhere in Illinois, mostly sunny early. Then some increasing cloudiness in Indiana, mostly sunny. Highs will range tomorrow from 27 in the north to around 40 in the far southern part of the state. The extended forecast calls for light snow that should move across northern and central portions of Illinois and Indiana tomorrow night right into Friday morning, with a few rain showers possible in the southern areas late Thursday night and into Friday. A little mixed precipitation may occur in between.
In agricultural news, the House Speaker says she'll push forward with energy bill legislation despite the threat of a veto from the White House. Nancy Pelosi says the bill will contain a $21 billion tax package, including repeal of tax breaks for major oil companies, as well as a huge increase in the renewable fuel standard and a mandate for utilities to use renewable fuels. Tuesday, Energy Secretary Sam Bodman said Pelosi is skating on thin ice, noting, quote, "It's wrong to single out the oil industry or any industry for new taxes." The bill would also require electric companies to produce 15% of their energy by renewable sources by 2020. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says that provision could kill the energy legislation.
I'm concerned that its inclusion in what was a bipartisan compromise will be jeopardized when the bill comes before the Senate. It may also draw a veto threat from the president. I'm hoping that we can still reach a bipartisan, bicameral agreement to increase the use of renewable fuels like ethanol and biodiesel. But the majority can't play politics if we're going to get a bill sent to the president.
The House draft bill may come up for a vote as early as tomorrow It would repeal $13.5 billion in tax breaks to oil companies in 2004 and 2005. The bill also would require automakers to increase fuel efficiency for cars, pickup trucks, and SUVs to 35 miles a gallon by 2020 and increase the RFS to 36 billion gallons by 2022. Farm groups, including the National Pork Producers Council and the AFBF, today are praising Senate passage of a bilateral free trade deal with Peru. U.S. exporters say the pact will boost farm sales. Missouri Republican Kit Bond.
Opening these markets would boost U.S. farm exports by $1.5 billion. Under the Peru FTA, more than two-thirds of current U.S. farm exports will become duty-free. Tariffs on all farm products will be eliminated in 17 years.
The deal will lock in duty-free U.S. access for many Peruvian goods while benefiting U.S. producers of meat, cotton, wheat, corn, rice, and other goods. President George Bush says he will sign the pact. For the first time ever, USDA is releasing a key government report while the futures market is still open. Due to the Christmas holiday, USDA is releasing its quarterly Hogs and Pigs report on December 27th, a Thursday at 2:30 p.m., while CME Electronic Trade is still in operation. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says he'll offer an amendment to the farm bill that would ban high-calorie snacks and sugary drinks from school stores and vending machines. The Agriculture Department runs the school lunch program, which feeds 30 million students a day. The plan would set limits on fat, sugar, and salt in foods sold in schools outside the meal program, with a top calorie limit of 200 for foods and beverages. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. It's willag.org. Quick reminder, next week I'll be on the road. Dave Dickey will be in this seat on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be along for the Farm Economics Summits in Effingham, and then Bloomington and the Ag Economist will make their way Thursday to Sycamore for those summits. Hope you get a chance to visit with them on those day-long events. Find out more at the Farm Doc website. On Thursday, I'll stay in Bloomington at the Interstate Center for the IT for Ag conference. That's all about handhelds and how they're used in agriculture. If you get the opportunity to visit the IT for Ag conference, you can do that on Thursday. Just search Google for IT for Ag conference, and you might drop University of Illinois in with that. Now, up next, U.S. laws and regulations regarding the use and distribution of genetically modified seeds are in place, but as you'll hear, there are still some international stumbling blocks. Farmers around the world plant genetically modified seed and have been for more than a decade. And while there has been a lot of public discussion in this area, the courts, especially in the United States, have been at the forefront of determining the validity of the intellectual property law that belongs to that seed. Brian Endres teaches agricultural law at the University of Illinois. He says the courts have done a remarkable job navigating the contracts on the back of each and every bag of GMO seed.
The law in that area is pretty well settled. There's been some court cases that have came out upholding all of the contractual restrictions, all the prohibitions against seed saving, and at least in the United States, intellectual property law regarding seeds is pretty well settled. Internationally, that's a huge issue.
An unsettled issue in developing countries and one that still causes problems for biotechnology firms. So, as the law goes, intellectual property is the first issue for biotechnology. The second is regulatory.
How does the government regulate for the environmental safety, health safety, for these new products that are coming out? The scientists need to take steps in the lab, and they do, to make sure that these are safe for the environment and safe to eat and safe to feed to animals. But, you know, what's the process from a regulatory point of view where you go through field trials before you actually release this to, you know, thousands of farmers to be growing in every field.
The U.S. policy here is called the coordinated framework. The federal government of the United States has a coordinated risk-based system to ensure new biotechnology products are safe for the environment and human and animal health. It was established as a formal policy in 1986 to integrate the EPA, the FDA, and the USDA.
So the FDA is looking at food safety as well as feed safety. The USDA is looking at, is this safe to grow? In other words, will it adversely impact agricultural productivity at some point? You know, is it a weed or is it a potential plant pest, is the regulatory jargon the USDA looks at. And then the EPA is looking at it, well, is this safe for the environment? And with respect to pesticides, residual pesticides that are incorporated into the plants, the EPA is the one who sets the tolerances for the food and the feed pesticide residue levels.
It is the coordinated framework in the U.S. that has allowed companies to efficiently, safely, and effectively introduce new biotech products. It is the regulatory law that oversees biotechnology. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
On a Wednesday afternoon, time to take a look at the cash grain market. Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, is away today doing some Christmas shopping, I think. Wyatt Muse is not Christmas shopping. He is at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Thanks, Wyatt, for staying at your desk today.
Yeah, absolutely. Still putting off my shopping to the last minute, I guess.
Oh, yeah, me too. That's the way it goes. Speaking of shopping, are farmers shopping around for good places to sell corn today?
Yeah, absolutely. We're buying a pretty fair amount. The past couple of days, we've had an opportunity to price some $4 cash corn for that January time frame, and actually seeing pretty strong interest in people starting to deliver this month while the ground's frozen up, especially kind of getting the bins cored out, as I think pretty much all of them are full. And aside from that, cash beans tonight for 08 off the combine over $10 is starting to draw a little bit of interest there.
Anybody making a sale?
Yeah, we've actually been buying a fair amount over the past few sessions, and I don't think that's unreasonable at all. DC8 tried to make a new contract high today and topped out the same place we topped yesterday, at 438¾ area. So as long as we're sitting at contract highs in both main commodities, I don't see anything wrong with selling into it.
Basis holding strong as we follow that market higher?
You know, our bean basis is really not doing a whole lot. It actually has come down just a couple cents from where it was a week ago on the beans. But corn seems to be holding on, continues to appreciate. Just amazing at seeing the demand on corn, kind of reading a little bit about the Gulf situation. There's talk of the elevation in the Gulf actually being maxed out, meaning the barges have been able to keep up, rails kept up, and the elevators for the export market are actually to a point where they're not able to load out anymore. So it's kind of a new scenario. Usually it's the railroad and the barge situation that's not able to make it to the export facility. So that's real good news. Our exports have been strong, and I think as long as everything keeps moving, corn basis should hold on.
And your bids for the day?
396 on cash corn, 411 off the combine next year. Cash soybeans are 1071 and 1004 off the combine next year. July wheat, 727.
$4 for anybody who calls up and says they listened to you on WILL today?
Well, we got there during the session. We didn't close there, but we can put in the night session.
Okay, thanks much.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Todd.
You're welcome. That's Wyatt Muse of the Andersons right here in Champaign County. No WILL premium there, but we sure do appreciate all the work they do for us. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A federal appeals court will hear the appeal of a Clinton man who was convicted of drowning his girlfriend's three young children in a car 4 years ago. Next week, the 4th District Court of Appeals in Springfield has agreed to hear the case of Maurice Legrone Jr. His attorneys say the jury in Legrone's murder trial last spring didn't get the option of finding him guilty of lesser charges. That was extended to the jury in the trial of the children's mother, Amanda Hamm. Divers have been searching a canal in suburban Lockport as part of an investigation into the disappearance of 23-year-old Stacy Peterson. Crews have three boats out in the canal today. Stacy Peterson disappeared in October. Her husband, former Bolingbrook police officer Drew Peterson, has been named a suspect in her case. Congressional investigators say there's a high risk of airplanes running into each other on the ground. In a report issued this afternoon, the Government Accountability Office blames faltering leadership, malfunctioning technology, and overworked air traffic controllers for the risk of a runway collision. In the last fiscal year, there were 370 runway incursions at U.S. airports. 12 of those were at O'Hare, another happened at Midway. An incursion is defined as any aircraft, vehicle, or person that goes where it shouldn't be, in space reserved for takeoff or landing. An FAA spokesman says only two of the Chicago area incursions were considered serious. A group of State Farm policyholders wants the Nebraska Supreme Court to reinstate its lawsuit against the Bloomington-based company. The policyholders say State Farm failed to deliver the medical coverage it promised on its automobile policies. Nebraska's High Court will hear arguments tomorrow about whether a judge's decision in State Farm's favor should be upheld. The attorney for policyholders says State Farm was obsessed with trying to cut costs for medical claims. The suit accuses the company of using a biased, unauthorized review process to arbitrarily deny some medical claims. State Farm denies the allegations. An honor guard of Marines and an escort of motorcyclists met the body of a Marine from Arcola this morning. The body of 21-year-old Corporal Alan Roberts arrived at Willard Airport. He was killed in a Humvee accident in Iraq. A procession brought his body to Arcola, where a funeral will be held Friday morning at the high school. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest.
Well, it's a bit of a wintry picture, I guess, since we talked last. It certainly had that little blast of snow move across the region the last 24 hours, and it laid down a nice little layer of snow in many areas across the region. Right now, we've got a considerable amount of wind blowing across a fair amount of the region. Most of the winds aren't as bad as they were overnight last night in the western portions of the Corn Belt, but we have seen quite a bit of strong gusts across the heart of the Midwest, and they're coming straight out of the north, bringing in a lot colder air temperatures this afternoon. Early this afternoon, obviously, running mostly in the 20s and 30s across the lower parts of the Midwest, while only some single-digit readings and teens being reported in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt. So it is definitely winter across the region today. The forecast is going to continue to suggest more winter-like conditions across the region. We have a disturbance that's exiting the eastern portions of the Midwest this afternoon. It will lay down a little bit of additional snow, but I think the main brunt of that storm system is now pretty much done with for the heart of the Midwest. But another disturbance will form in the plains overnight tonight and will begin to push across the western Corn Belt on Thursday. We should see mostly a snow event out of that, but maybe a little bit of freezing drizzle or light rain might occur in the southernmost parts of the region. But the western Corn Belt will probably pick up another 1 to 4 inches, maybe some local 6-inch accumulations out there in Iowa, parts of Minnesota, Wisconsin, maybe far northern Missouri. And that will move to the Great Lakes region, maybe reaching as far south as some central Illinois and central Indiana locations during the latter part of the day tomorrow and on into tomorrow night. And then a much larger storm system will attempt to move across the region. This storm system is expected to bring a mixture of rain, freezing rain, sleet, and snow across a fair amount of the Midwest. It'll begin on Saturday in the western Corn Belt, move across the heart of the region Sunday into early Monday morning, actually, for some areas, and it will be followed by yet another storm system, producing a good mix of precipitation across the region again during the middle part of next week. We're not even done then. We have one more storm system being suggested for the 16th and 17th. So a lot of precipitation will occur across the Midwest over the next 10 days, enough to saturate the ground or keep it saturated, and the risk of flooding will likely begin to increase in the lower parts of the Midwest as each one of these systems comes through the region.
You know winter hasn't officially begun, right?
Oh, well, yeah, but from a meteorological perspective, we started on December 1st.
Okay, apparently so. Very quickly, tell me about South America.
Well, Argentina is certainly center stage right now. It's too dry across the country. We had a little bit of rain occur in the last day or two, but the amount of rain that fell was just not enough, and the models here at midday today took away rain for most of the country for much of the next 2 weeks. There's some showers that kind of come and go briefly between now and Monday, but none of them produce enough rain to counter evaporation, and the model did turn quite a bit drier for the latter part of next week. So if this ends up verifying, we're going to have some pretty serious crop stress coming up. And keep in mind, the corn, the early corn crop, will be ready to reproduce later this month. And that means that we could be facing some production losses there.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can see what Drew had to say on our website, along with the grain analysis and the cash grain analysis. It's all at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Todd Gleason.